Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We promise you a little baseball chatter. We will get some with Bob Klapisch of the New York Times, Bleacher Report, of course, co-author of the New York Times bestseller, Inside the Empire. Robert, Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on.
Well, appreciate you coming on and giving us a few minutes on baseball, and certainly a lot of optimism around New York these days. Both general managers trying to put their best foot forward and trying to give the rest of the team that's already there a little more optimism heading into this 2020 season. Do you think both guys have done a decent job so far?
Oh, there's no question. I think, you know, it's a good time of the year for Mets and Yankees fans. I mean, just on paper and in theory, both clubs have improved considerably. They've added some marquee players, and it's not unrealistic to think of the Yankees going to the World Series. In fact, it's a likelihood to me, and it's not unrealistic to think of the Mets being a playoff team. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm a Mets fan or a Yankees fan, I'm counting down the days to pitchers and catchers.
And it's interesting, Bob, for you guys, because as you cover these teams, they both have some really interesting players that we all want to know how will fit in the mix. When you look at the Yankees, it's Tauchman, it's Andujar, it's Clint Frazier. How they work these guys in. And with the Mets, it's J.D. Davis, it's Dom Smith, you know, trying to figure out how they will use McNeil and in what position, who will be the backup catcher and the center fielder. So both teams really do have some drama around them that fans are interested in. They want to know how it's all going to play out.
Well, I beg to differ on one point. I don't think anybody's really worried about, Tauchman right now. I think they're more interested in Garrett Cole and, you know, I mean, there's people on.
Those are sort of given. I guess my point is those are givens. How they're going to work the players I talked about in or out is sort of interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, both have rosters that have options and a lot of moving parts and some variables. I think the equations are a little bit different, or actually I'd say they're significantly different for both teams. You know, for one, the Yankees, I just don't see a competitive threat from anybody else in the division. I mean, all due respect to the Rays, they're a great team with great pitching, no doubt, but I just don't see them closing the gap on the Yankees this year, and the same thing with the Astros. The Yankees have taken one of the best pieces out of the rotation, and so that's an addition by subtraction. So unless something goes catastrophically wrong with this team, I think the Yankees have a clear path to winning the pennant. It's theirs to lose. Whereas the Mets, even though they are no doubt they are improved, and there is legitimate reason for optimism. I mean, they're in a tough division. I mean, they're next door neighbors, you know, with the defending world champions, and the Braves are an excellent team, and the Phillies are clearly going for it. They're all in. So the moving parts, you know, where everyone fits in is no question. It's going to be part of an overall greater strategic importance to both clubs, but I think the Mets have a tougher go ahead of them than the Yankees.
Yeah, and I would agree 100%, and you make a good point that the Yankees can afford to be wrong. You know, they can mess around with Tauchman and Andujar and Voit and Ford and try to figure out their lineup and do a lot of different things that probably won't cost them in the long run, whereas the Mets probably in a position where they have to be right a little more often. They got to figure out how to get center field straightened out. They got to figure out their backup catcher. They got to figure out if they want to keep Dom Smith. And it matters because they probably, if they are successful, will get in by the skin of their teeth due to the quality that's around them. So you make a very good point there. What do you expect and what do you look at for the Mets in terms of critical decisions for them?
Well, I think they made a great move, and I actually wrote about this. I put this out on Twitter the other day. I thought their decision to gamble on Betances was a stroke of genius. Because let's assume he's healthy, and I know it's a big if. It's a big leap to spend $10 million on a player who's had two significant injuries in the last 12 months. But he is supposed to be ready by spring training. And if he is ready, and if this is the Betances that we have seen over the years in the Bronx, I think he's their closer by May. That's how much I think of him. That's how much of a competitor he is, a warrior he is, how good he is in the clubhouse, and how he has proven himself in a very, very tough market. I mean, he's unlike most free agents that come to New York. You don't have to worry if he can handle the crowd, talk radio, the questions after the games, the back page headlines. He's been through all that, and he's been through some tough times too. Remember, this guy was scorched by Randy Levine a couple of years ago.
Yes.
When he tried to take the Yankees to arbitration. So he's got thick skin. He's got thick enough skin that I could say he will succeed if his arm and his Achilles tendon allow it. And so far, everything I've heard is that he's a go. He's a go starting pitchers and catchers. So I think that's it's a huge move for the Mets, and it's one of the best signings. And frankly, I'm surprised that the Yankees let him walk. Now, there's a lot of people in the industry who think that Betances will rebuild his value with the Mets. He'll have a good year with the Mets, and a year from now, he'll be a free agent again, and the Yankees will come back and get him. Well, not so fast. I think he's going to enjoy pitching for Carlos Beltran. Remember that, you know, they know each other. They wore the same pinstripes. And, you know, I would not discount, you know, the residual hard feelings that Betances has for the Yankee hierarchy for that difficult arbitration dust-up. He may end up liking the Mets. He may end up staying. Now, it's not a likelihood. It's not a probability. But to me, it is a possibility that he ends up really enjoying himself there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that it's certainly worth the risk. And I was all for that as well. I would have liked to have seen him try to get Roman, too, although I don't know if that circumstance is there. You just talked about how battle-tested Betances is and how he's not likely to wither. I certainly agree with you. How do you feel about Beltran stepping into that role and New York and, you know, all the pitching changes that are made now and how the game is managed these days and load management stuff with players now? It's really, really quite a few moving parts for managers these days. You don't throw a lineup out there and then throw the same lineup out there the next day. It's quite a challenge, the number of decisions that the 2020 baseball manager makes.
Oh, you hit it right on the head. I mean, we could spend this entire segment talking about, you know, the different job responsibilities as managers have today, because compared to when I first started covering baseball like 10 million years ago, I mean, managers then, it used to be a personality-driven position in that, you know, they were the most important, the most dynamic figures in the clubhouse, sometimes in the organization. You think about Whitey Herzog and Tommy Lasorda and Blee Martin and Lou Piniella. I mean, they were literally giants in the room, and they took up all the energy and they took up all, you know, the bandwidth, whereas today managers are really just the messenger of the analytics department. I mean, there isn't a circumstance or situation in the game, especially late in the game, that hasn't already been run through the software, has been already been run through the analytics people to tell you your greatest chance of success in the seventh inning against this batter with this pitcher is X. And it's really an X and Y calculus now. So if you make a decision, more often than not, it's been decided by the math, by a computer software program. The manager's job is to sell that to his players, is to get his players to believe in it, to be all pulling in the same direction. Now, 2 years ago, the Red Sox were all in on Alex Cora. They loved the guy. And I think the Mets are trying to recreate that with Beltran, because Beltran has a very winning personality. People just like him on the spot. He has that thing that people respond to, players respond to. And I think the Mets realize they're having a very inexperienced person in that position, but there's something about Carlos Beltran's aura that makes it easy for players to say, okay, I buy into this guy. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm not going to be backstabbing him. I'm not going to be talking behind his back in the clubhouse. I'm certainly not going to rip him to the press. I like this guy, and he's going to get my 100%. Now, if that's the case, then the Mets got themselves a pretty good manager. The Red Sox did that 2 years ago with Cora. The Yankees got that same result from Aaron Boone last year, and the Mets are hoping to get the same thing from Beltran in 2020.
Bob Clappish, New York Times, joining us. How did Inside the Empire do for Christmas? I bet pretty well, huh?
We had a nice boost. Really nice Christmas surge. I mean, we had two great selling periods, you know, two really great windows. One was when the book first came out. You know, we had a nice excerpt in the New York Post on the back page, and it was really great. We ended up making the New York Times bestseller list in the first week that the book was out, which is every author's dream. I mean, it was just a nice feather in the cap to say this book made it to New York Times bestseller list, and it was number in the top 10 sports selling books through June. So we did great, and there was a lull over the summer, and then at Christmas, everybody decided that, hey, this be a great gift for Dad. And it did help, too, that the Yankees went up, got Gerrit Cole, and there's a lot of excitement about the team, and a lot of fans wanted to get their hands on as much information as possible. And this book really was sort of a behind-the-scenes look of how this organization operates. You know, we've got great access to not just the players and not just Aaron Boone, but Brian Cashman let me sit in the cockpit with him, and Hal Steinbrenner did the same, and Randy Levine did the same. There's a look at the Yankees that you're not going to find anywhere else, and I'm proud of this book. In fact, in December, Paul Solitaroff, my co-author, and I, we wrote another chapter covering the 2019 season, and it will be out in paperback in late March, just in time for opening day.
Wow, great. That's a great little bit of news for our fans out there that
enjoy
the Yankees. That's great. Around baseball, some of the teams that don't spend money did, and it's sort of nice that, you know, Rendon is over there with Trout now, and they add a little excitement there. The White Sox have made a lot of moves, and some of the fear that only the real top contenders would spend and everybody else would sort of try to tank a little bit or not worry about it because they couldn't get over the top anyway, at least for this part of December, has sort of gone away a bit. We've had some teams spend some money.
Yeah, it's nice, you know, and I think there was a real doomsday scenario peeking around the corner that baseball would be reduced to three or four teams that are competitive, and you'd have 22 teams that just, you know, were done by opening day. And it seems like enough teams now have at least decided they want to go for it. And it certainly doesn't hurt baseball to have a wild card be the defending champion. I think it's just good for the sport, and it gives hope to the smaller markets, and it gives hope to the smaller markets that want to spend on older players. I mean, it's just not going to be a bunch of 23-year-olds making major league minimum now. I think you can sort of think outside that box, and you can win. I think the Nationals being world champs is a great shot in the arm for the sport, which very much needs it. I mean, attendance is down. Let's be honest. There are some demographics issues that this sport has to tackle. So I think it's better this way that teams go for it and that you have an unlikely champion in the Nationals. It just can't be the Yankees every year, and I know that's an old argument. The Yankees haven't won in forever, but you need to have some sort of diversity in the championship seat and the teams that reign as champions. And baseball has done that in the last couple of years, and it certainly did it last year. And I think overall it's good for the sport. Now, that said, I do think the Yankees are going to end up winning the World Series next year unless, like I said, something goes catastrophically wrong or they have another run of injuries or somebody appears out of the woodwork like the Nationals. But right now, if you ask me today, I do think the Yankees are in the most enviable seat.
Bob, being around baseball the way you have, Bob Klapisch of the Times joining us, what kind of a challenge is it, let's put it that way, when the fan base can't wait for October and you can't make October come any quicker? You know, the Yankee fan is already assuming in large part that they're going to start the postseason like the other nine teams that are in the postseason, 0-0, trying to prove themselves again, but they can't make it come fast whether they win 120 games or 90 games. You know, they got to wait. What's that like for Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone, et cetera, in your mind?
Well, it's better to wait when you have a roster like that than, let's say, you're sitting on top of the roster like the Royals.
I think no doubt.
It's
no
not
doubt.
A bad time to be impatient. But, you know, you touch on a good point, the Yankee narrative. You know, somewhere along the line, the Yankees used to be a team whose motto was World Series or bust. If we don't win the World Series, then we have failed. Somewhere along the line, after 2014, that message, that business plan changed, and it became, well, we're good enough to get to the postseason every year, and from there it's a crapshoot. We just have to hope for a hot streak in October. And that sort of sold in 2016, 17, and 18. The Yankees were in the playoffs. They were building towards something, but last year is the first time it stalled. And it's the first time since this quote-unquote rebuild began that there was rumblings of discontent, and it just didn't seem like it was enough. They actually went backwards. And I think that in large part, that drove the negotiation with Cole. I think Hal Steinbrenner finally said, you know what, we're not getting where we want to go. And to see the Nationals zoom right past them and become world champs, I think Hal finally said, you know what, screw it. We're going to pay whatever it takes. We're going to take the best pitcher out there. We're going to get the missing part that we need, and we're going to win it in 2020. It's time for us to win.
Yeah, I think that's clearly a part of it. And you know, they just got tired of being so close and winning 100 games twice and then not even getting to the World Series, much less winning it. What is your thought about the difference between regular season baseball and playoff baseball when it comes to the use of pitchers? It seems like the dichotomy is getting bigger and that, you know, the starters and the, you know, the closers starting or the, you know, the 6-7-man rotation through a game is fine in the regular year, but no one's overly comfortable with it in the postseason. How does that enter into management over the next 5 years in your mind?
Well, I think this past postseason really proves that there is no substitute for a dominant ace. I mean, you just can't bullpen your way to the World Series. Look, the Yankees had to start Chad Green in Game 6. I understand they had some injuries, and this was not their full roster. It's not what they thought they were going to the postseason with. But when push came to shove with the season on the line, they had to start make it a bullpen game with Chad Green. It just does not work. And that's in large part why they have Gerrit Cole, because you have to be able to give the ball to somebody who you know can pitch to the moment, and a relief pitcher just can't. So I think that that formula that you need a stud at the top of the rotation to pitch when everything's on the line, that's been reinforced, and hopefully it stays for a long time.
And I would think, too, that there is an intangible value inside the clubhouse knowing you have that guy. You know, I'm a believer that guys in the clubhouse got to believe. I'm a believer in football that the offense has to have some faith in the defense and vice versa. And I'm a believer that in baseball that, you know, you got to have some faith in your pitching staff and your management. Let's go get a stud. And doing that has an intangible value in my mind. Agree?
No doubt. Look, I've been covering baseball long enough to remember what Dwight Gooden did to the rest of the Mets pitching staff in 85. They all felt invincible because they knew every fifth day they're practically guaranteed a win. And if the season came down to it, Gooden would go out there and just blow everyone away. Even though the Mets didn't win in 85, that feeling sort of permeated all the way down to throughout the rotation, down to 1 through 5. And I think that, for instance, Gerrit Cole is going to make James Paxton a much better pitcher. I think he's going to make Luis Severino a much better pitcher because they know that Cole is the last line of defense. And not only is he their last line of defense, he wants that. He wants the ball in that situation. Not everybody does. I mean, there are pitchers who've had as much talent as Gerrit Cole. But not many pitchers want to be in that position of having to carry the load in a Game 7 situation. It takes a unique kind of person, not just a pitcher with a special arsenal, but a unique personality to want the ball in those situations, and the Yankees have that person.
Yeah, lack of fear and a guy that expects success, and that's who they hope they have in Gerrit Cole. Let's finish with your thought on being Rob Manfred. What's important to you right now about the game? What do you think should be important to him? What kind of changes do you expect to baseball over the next couple of years under Manfred?
Well, I'm going to address the most immediate issue. If I could plug into Rob Manfred's head, if I could do like the Vulcan mind meld from Star Trek, I'd like to know what is he thinking trying to take apart the minor league system. I mean, it's unthinkable that in his mind he thinks that he can take baseball away from the small communities around this country, take away the bond, the communion that minor league baseball has with parts of this country that don't have major league franchises, you know, that are really outside the markets of the closest team. The teams, the ones that sort of grow the sport from the Class A, Class Double A, the ones on the way up, that relationship that baseball has with young stars is going to go away if Rob Manfred has his way. And I really wish I could dissuade him for what he's doing. I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to condense the minor league system, some of which is indeed wasteful. But there's no doubt there's an emotional attachment that America has, small town America has with its teams, with its baseball teams, that should not change. And I really wish I could get him to change his mind on that.
Yeah, I think that it's a shame as well, because I've talked to some of these owners too, and they are devastated by it. And a lot of them were notified by email. I mean, it wasn't even, you know, and then they had meetings and try to straighten it out and try to put some pressure on them. But it sounds like it's, you know, it's not necessarily a done deal, but they're going to have to work hard in order to talk baseball to back off this. And it doesn't seem to make sense to anybody involved, especially, Bob, when you see that revenues are up the way they are. I mean, revenues
are
up. So
there's no doubt the game is awash in money. They can absorb whatever losses that the minor league is inflicting on the overall economy of baseball. It's just it's an important part about keeping fans engaged in the game. You want them to love the sport all the way up through the pipeline, and to cut off this many communities and towns, it just makes no sense. I'll make one other point. The other issue that's right in front of Manfred's face, which is even more immediate because the minor league issue at least is 1 year away. He's got to come down hard on the Astros. He's really, really got to come down on them for this cheating scandal. I mean, a lot of people are paying close attention to what kind of discipline Manfred is going to bring down on this franchise, because, you know, they have openly defied him on the sign stealing. And if he doesn't assert his authority and levy a stiff penalty, it will hurt him in the long run. And it will certainly hurt the sport.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. And the interesting part is how hard he comes down on the players and where he can draw the line. I think that's where the drama is for the fans. They know about draft picks. They know about financial fines and financial hurt to the team. What they don't know is, will it go to the manager? Will it go to any players? Will it go to managers that aren't there anymore, like a Carlos Beltran?
Absolutely. I mean, people all the way to the top have to be suspended. I mean, you know, I'm not, maybe not lifetime, but it's got to hurt. It really has to hurt to send the kind of message that you do not do this, and you certainly don't do it after you've been warned by the commissioner's office. So, you know, everybody's waiting on this one. It's, the decision is not close. I know that Manfred has his entire investigative department working on it. That's one reason why Domingo Germán has been put on the back burner, because the entire bandwidth of the commissioner's office right now is focused on the Astros. So maybe sometime before spring training, but it's going to hurt. Or at least
I was
going to
ask you that. Do you have a guess on the date?
It's going to be by early February, but it's going to be a meticulous investigation. It already is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, Bob, continued success with the book. I'm glad you had a great Christmas run. Happy New Year to you, and thanks for giving the fans a little insight this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.